Hey, what's up, everyone? Dan Hafner here. Welcome into this week's episode of the show. So I'm going to jump right into the interview here. It was actually recorded a couple of days ago. I'm going to then come back after the interview and add on a couple of different things, give a little bit more of my take on this, and then we're going to do a couple of news stories that are going to be really relevant to this topic of conversation. So without any further ado, here you go. Hey there, everyone. Welcome into this week's show. My name is Dan Hafner. I'm joined today by my guest, Emmanuel Rose. I'll introduce him here in a second here. Super excited to welcome you back to another week. We're going to continue in this conversation of AI. If you caught last week's episode, talked a little bit about, you know, there's this human element to AI that I think a lot of people are overlooking. But some people, such as Emmanuel, are not overlooking. So I'm really interested to get into this and talk about this. So, Emmanuel, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks so much, Dan. Yeah, I've been in sales marketing for over three decades and started to encapsulate some of that knowledge into this series of marketing books about authenticity in the age of AI is one of the books. And then also a book about marketing to Generation Z.
Yeah, I'm super interested to that. So why is that relevant? Why is that relevant in this day and age?
Well, I think it's critical that as we get this amazing new tool that are proliferating in the marketing space in particular. I mean, we know that AI is not new, right? It's started in the 50s. It's right. Been permeating software for a long time, but there's this proliferation that's happened from chat and then Google and Microsoft, and now Elon's in the game. So we got to figure out how to use these tools to our advantage, but then also still get the outcomes that we need, right? And that's the relevance.
Yeah, because I think, you know, and as someone who follows along in the tech world and the marketing world, you know, There's this constant theme of, hey, like you have to, there's always this, I guess it's always been that way. You're always marketing to the future generations and kind of learning, like, you know, what are maybe some things that used to work in the marketing and sales and business world, maybe don't work on a generation by and large. Maybe, you know, that's a very broad topic, but, you know, is that, I guess that's applying to this, you know, I guess people like I'm the millennial generation. You got the Gen Z, you got, you know, whatever different ones there are now. What are some of the things that people should be paying attention to with this generation?
Well, I think it's critical that we look at particularly in the case of AI, that we say, hey, how does this tool help to take one part of my marketing, like just say copywriting? How can I streamline my copywriting? And how do I best use this tool, right? So it's great for keyword research. It's great for building content calendars. It's great for taking the content calendar and then starting to build some small pieces of content. But in everything that you do, no matter which of the services that you're using that's generative, you've got to take the time to get rid of the hallucinations, right? The kind of the craziness that comes from the computer. And then you got to remember that you're still only talking to one person, and that one person needs a message that's relevant to them. And in classic marketing is problem, solution, call to action, some form of that, right? And so you got to take that, you got to mold it down and mold it down and mold it down, and then be on top, on brand, and then also from a believable human voice, human to human. So it's a great tool, but there's still a lot of work to be done, even with that great tool.
Yeah, no, I was talking about this in the last episode too. I think, you know, I love one of the big things I've, first thing I started using ChatGPT for when I first saw it was email creation. I'm a very bad copywriter, not my cup of tea, not something I like to do or I'm very good at. So it's like, hey, write me an email of this, that, and the other thing. And then boom, right? And it will, yeah. And again, it's a game of the better inputs you give it, the better outputs it's going to give you. So then it's like, hey, write this in a little more of a friendlier tone, or be a little sarcastic, or, you know, include different elements of this. I think that's when I really started to notice that, right, you're right. It can do 95% of the work for you. But then in order to get that like human authenticity, you know, last little piece in there that you have to do, there's still work you have to do. It's not just going to do everything for you, right?
Yeah, not yet. And so what I call lazy marketers are just plugging stuff in and then populating these, you know, these massive shotgun approach emails. And, you know, even to the point where, like, I'm getting emails now where there's not even my first name in there. There's just a comma where my first name's supposed to be.
Or like the tags, first name.
And so, you know, the kind of lazy marketing is not going to solve anything for a small business, a smaller than mid-sized business, right? We still have to be targeted to who is the human that I'm talking to? What is their role in the company? Or what is their role in the household? What is the challenge they have, and how can I help them self-educate, trial, and move to purchase as quickly as possible in a way that they are able to consume information?
Interesting. So what do you think is, I'm trying to think of the best way to word this. What do you think is like the, in the future, but, you know, is, cause I think a lot of the younger generation, they kind of have this, I think there's a lot of desire for companies to be more than just companies too. Like there's, you know, everyone wants to know that, hey, go to this sustainable business or this green business or something that's, you know, I feel like I'm helping the planet or whatever it is in some way. I don't fully understand. I'm not really of that generation, but it's a thing to pay attention to. It's a legitimate thing. So as a, you know, as someone who does marketing online or does, you know, sales in whatever industry you're in, is that something that really should garner a lot of attention? Is there messaging that you should be paying attention to in that area? Or is that just something that you're just kind of like, I guess that's what I'm trying to ask. Is there certain ways that you need to approach those types of things?
Yeah, I think that's a great observation, a great question, Dan. And it's a phenomenon that I call the social CEO, right? And there was a book written about it about 5 or 6 years. And I outline this in a book about the social media edge and the idea that as someone who either owns or manages or CEO of a business, that we need to be the primary influencer, right? Influencer. And that we need to spend some time on video, that we need to talk about what civic organizations we're involved in. You know, where am I spending my time on the weekends with my family? Humanizing myself as the leader, and also humanizing the brand and showing that I'm participating in the world, not just trying to transact. And I mean, this is effective for all generations, but particularly for Gen Z, because they really are a very values-based purchaser. And they know how to track down and buy absolutely everything on the internet. So then the differentiation becomes filling this gap that they have, which is connecting with other humans, right? That's like they spend so much time and they understand digital so well that they knowingly or unknowingly have a big gap in there, and that is connecting to other humans. And so that's how we can connect as brands to these end users.
Interesting. Okay. So how do I do that? Like if I'm someone listening to this and I'm, you know, how do I value how do I market my values? Is that a social media thing? Is that something that you can use AI for? Like how, I mean, give that to me in like fifth grader terms. Like how would I do that?
No, I mean, that's the correct question. I applaud you. You're quick on the move here.
Thanks.
And it's very straightforward. And it is a calendar item on Monday mornings, 9 a.m. is you take 90 seconds to video yourself on your phone and simply talk about one of a few topics. One, what was the last thing that you did that was civic minded or community oriented, or even a donation that you made? Two is who in your network that you've worked with recently really impacted you and that you're really fond of right now, you know, employee or vendor of the week kind of ideas. Three would be a customer success story and somebody that you interacted with that you were really excited about. And four would be a product announcement, but it's all done. You only need 90 seconds and you take each of those topics one at a time, one per week. Hit your 90 seconds, take that 90 seconds of video and send it to your agency or your marketing department or yourself and get it transcribed, cut the video down into an edited piece, snippet it if there's some things that are snippable. Then you have your blog content, you got a video post, and you've got at least three social posts from that 90 seconds.
I like it. That is straightforward. That's awesome. Another quick question for you before we go to a quick break. You mentioned blogging in there. I'm glad you mentioned that. I saw you had that on your list. I mean, does blogging still get you results? Like I feel like I have mixed. You hear one thing from someone and then you hear another thing from, it's probably like anything else in the world, right? But you know, does blogging still work? Is that something that is still worth putting the time into?
Well, I think yes, that's my short answer. Absolutely. It used to be the blog was the centerpiece of everything we did, right?
Right.
About 3 years ago. Now video is the centerpiece of everything we do. You want to do everything starting with video, just like you're recording this episode, right? And then you take the transcription and then you push it to the blog. And the reason you still need the blog is, A, some people are visual learners. And they want to read every detail, right? Two, the search engines are still crawling your website to help with your SEO. So you have to have fresh content that gets on there so they have something to crawl, right? Because we're still all using the search engines in order to do some form of research on new product purchases. So it's not the centerpiece anymore, but it's the second layer out. That's the first most important spoke.
Interesting. Okay. All right. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back here in a couple of minutes, and then we'll dive more into another topic I want to talk to you and dive a little bit deeper into.
Introducing Launchpad, the perfect partner to help you launch your dream project to the world. We know that time is of the essence, and we are here to help you make the most of it. With Launchpad, you'll get access to the most advanced digital tools and strategies to take your idea from a mere concept to a fully fledged success. Whether you're an aspiring entrepreneur or a seasoned pro, we have everything you need to make your mark in the world. So why wait? It's time to take the leap and make your vision a reality. Launchpad, your ultimate launch partner. Let's make magic together.
Hi, I'm Julianne Meyer, the host of Own Your Wellness, and you can watch my show on Mondays and Thursdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific on Achieve TV right here on E360 TV. Remember, there's more to health and wellness than broccoli and burpees.
All right, we're back. Got a little bit of a different layout here. I like this. All right, welcome back into the show. I'm talking here with Emmanuel Rose. We're talking about authenticity in the world of, you know, AI in terms of marketing, sales, all this kind of stuff. So, Emmanuel, you mentioned something here a few minutes ago, that was this concept of the social SEO, or I'm sorry, social CEO. Sorry.
Yep.
Can you go, let's go back to that. I kind of want to, that's an interesting topic. So can you go over that again? Like, what is a social CEO?
You bet. And it's something that we're all familiar with because we see it every day. We see Elon Musk on Twitter or being interviewed by Joe Rogan, and he's talking about any one of his projects, right? And he's the biggest advocate for the Tesla, and he's the influencer, the primary influencer. And so that's what we're emulating, is that the CEO is the public face, or the owner or the manager is the public face. And that not just are they running the business, but they're also out there showing the world what kind of person they are and what kind of work that the company does in order to help enhance the lives of the people who appreciate it. So it's really about a commitment to say, you know, maybe I'm Gen X. Like I really don't want to be doing video and podcasts and all that stuff. But I know if I wanted to speak to, you know, to other people, younger people, that I have to have a presence about that. And so whether I care about it or not, whether I listen to podcasts or not, that doesn't matter. There's a lot of people who do pay attention to social media, listen to podcasts, watch TikTok, whatever the platform is. So we have to be committed to speaking to the target markets that we have. And that's
interesting. You know, that really hits home too, because I've gone through, I think in my, this is me being authentic social SEO or a CEO, right? I think I've had my ups and downs with, you know, being social, producing content, getting back into doing the show and doing it in a lot higher of a level than I used to do it is kind of my attempt to kind of get into that and do those types of things. But I think you're exactly right. There's a lot, you know, as entrepreneurs, as people trying to build businesses and do our own thing, we can tend to get kind of caught in the weeds a lot of times. Yeah. And taking the time to produce this content, to create blog posts, to do videos, to do podcasts, to do all this other stuff, I've, at least in my experience, and I've seen it happen with other people, it tends to be like, gosh, I don't really want to do that. I don't have time to do that. I have all this client work to do. You have the same thing happen. So I can see where people get, you know, caught up in that, and you're just like, man, I wish I could be like Elon, just go on all these interviews and just promote Tesla and promote Twitter and do all these different things. But then we're like, we also have like client needs to fulfill and do all those types of things too. So do you have, like, I guess to the owner out there that's like me, like, okay, like how do I produce this content? I know you gave us the 90-second example and things like that. Do you have anything else, you know, beyond that for anyone who's looking to do, you know, bigger and better things?
Well, I think, you know, depending on, you know, if any business is doing at least $500,000 should be involved with an agency of some sort. Right. So outsourcing a good part of the marketing, because you're never going to be able to hire one person that can manage all the elements of modern marketing. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is to be committed to it, and then to have some KPIs around it and say, okay, I'm going to do 6 podcasts a month. What is that generating for me? And how do I maximize the value of being on those podcasts? And if it's not direct sales, then like what I do is I take these podcasts, I send them to my team, and then we generate social content from every one of these. I get 15 pieces of social content that goes out everywhere. So that I'm, you know, I'm getting double value from it. So that's the second thing, is be committed, have some KPIs and leverage it. And then the third thing is you got to have fun doing it. You got to pick a platform either that you want to be on, that you enjoy, or a platform that you know your people live on and that they need you to be there.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's very smart. And then also, you know, like you said, once you scale and working with other companies to outsource that kind of stuff, because that was my one thing, is like, okay, and I find this with myself and with other people as well too. You know, there's so many things you could do. There's so many platforms out there. There's YouTube, there's podcasting, there's 9 million different ways, and there's probably new ones that just came out today. You know what I mean?
For sure.
So if you could pick, you know, we talked about videos versus blogs and that kind of stuff. Like, what if you could only do one thing? You know, if I was just trying to focus on like one specific marketing thing to do consistently, yeah. You know, what would that be?
Well, if you're selling business to consumer, then pay-per-click ads. That I would say pay-per-click to a landing page. There's your social, right? TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. Those pay-per-click ads will generate the ROI that you need to build a business. If you're selling B2B, then I would say LinkedIn content and expanding your LinkedIn presence and posting and connecting with people on LinkedIn. Those are the highest form of ROI right now that I'm seeing.
Interesting. Okay. And I think like in what you mentioned before, doing all of the different, you know, does that omnipresence of being everywhere where you take, you know, we'll take this show and we'll break it out into multiple pieces of content and that kind of stuff. You know, does that omnipresence, does that actually help your authenticity?
Well, that's a good question. Does it help your authenticity? It does if you are tuning things to the viewer on those platforms, right? Like, you're not going to take your Twitter posts and put those on Pinterest, right? That would be an inauthentic cross-platform post. But you could take some Facebook and Instagram, you know, and some of that will flip over and be similar. But, you know, I look more at the psychographics of it and say, well, who are the people I'm trying to reach and what is the message I'm trying to get to? So if I only want to sell to moms and I only can afford one platform, then I'm just going to go for Pinterest. And if I'm going to lace in a second one, then I'll go to TikTok or Instagram. But, you know, let's stay simple and with the demographics and the psychographics so that we can nail one target market at a time cleanly. And then once that is covering or paying, then we can move on to the next target market.
Okay. That makes sense. I'm curious. I was just thinking, what are your thoughts on, have you seen all these different AI platforms out there that can, you know, create your social content for you? I'm curious what your thoughts are of those things. Are they rudimentary right now? I honestly don't have a whole lot of experience with them. I've seen them, I've been marketed, you know, to them, but I've never really, like, you know, procured one or bought one or used one or really anything like that. I'm just interested, like, because you see people all the time, like, hey, generate, you know, 30 days of your social media content with ChatGPT in 90 seconds. And, you know, and I'm sure that it can create content, but again, it might not be super authentic. It might not be great. I'm just curious, do you have any thoughts on, you know, any of those tools? Have you used any of those tools or anything like that?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the proliferation of tools in the last 120 days is mind-numbing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I can't keep up with it, right? I'm trying to. So I have a couple of newsletters I subscribe to. Those guys are keeping up with it, and I kind of cherry pick from those. Are there tools? There's lots of tools that do it. I wouldn't recommend anything more than a week at a time of content creation. Otherwise, you're just going to bury yourself in editing and resolving all the things that we've been talking about, right? So no, I haven't found one that we're using yet. We're still doing this stuff by hand because in a lot of ways it's the most efficient. Now, like I said, building a content calendar or getting summaries from blog posts, you know, to build one or two posts and then matching up with realistic photos. We'll use it for that, but I haven't found one yet that's just a plug and shoot. And I think we're a little bit of time away. I don't know, it's more than a year, but yeah, we're a little bit still a little bit away from that.
Well, it's interesting too, because I think you know, especially in talking about generational differences, and I find myself being this, probably being a millennial, one of the earliest generations of this instant gratification thing, right? Of just, man, I just wish there was a tool out there that would just do all my marketing for me. I wouldn't have to do anything. I could just focus on what I love to do. And that doesn't exist, right? So there's always going to be this level of work. So I mean, this is probably a self-explanatory question, but it seems like, you know, the people who are willing to do those types, like you said, like I can have a calendar of like, hey, do this live video around this day. And then, you know, this week, do this one. And what, but I still actually have to do the video by myself. Right. So I'm sure you see the people that are willing to do those things have the better results. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we have to what our culture has a challenge with is that we always want to get the outcome without doing the right culturally.
Right, exactly.
And it's not a new phenomenon in human nature. The Chinese have a saying that says, everybody wants to shoot the bow, but no one wants to pull the string. And so, so that tells me, right, this is at least a couple thousand years old we've been dealing with this. What we have to remember is that we're part of what we're here to do is to work, and that we have to experience all these things, and we have to imbue all of our work product with ourself. And so that's the push pull of a of all these tools is where do I get the efficiency, but where do I continue to spice in and imbue in the work my humanness, my unique perspective, and me, because that's ultimately we do business with people we know, like, and trust.
Wow. Interesting stuff. Very, very interesting stuff. I really, really appreciate you coming on. So, all right. So where can we go? I think you said emmanuelrose.com is a good place for someone to go learn more about you.
Yeah. And then the books are on amazon.com. Yep.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Manuel. Really appreciate you coming on the show. This is a really interesting conversation. Probably going to add a little bit more context to this inside of, you know, the rest of the show. Sure. But this is really, really interesting. And I think worth a re-listen too, for any of you out there listening to this. This is, again, just this authenticity thing, especially compared with what we talked about last week too. I think is really, really, really interesting. So anything else to add, Emmanuel?
No, I really enjoyed our conversation, Dan. Thanks for sharing
time with me. All right. Awesome. Well, thank you very much. And I'll catch you guys on the other side of this break. All right. Welcome back. So yeah, that was a very interesting interview. I wanted to bring Emmanuel on. I think especially after the last episode where I talked a lot about the world of AI. I actually have some really interesting stories I want to run through, like real world stories. I'm talking about like actual things that are happening in the world of news and politics and AI and how it's all kind of coming together. But before I get into those, you know, this game of being authentic in this world, you know, I think it actually, it relates to this show also, you know, I've gone back and forth with this show for a very long time. I started the show about 5 years ago. I started out, I was very, very bad. I got a lot better. And that added to my authenticity, to my actual legitimacy inside of being able to produce podcasts and now a TV show, all these types of things, because I literally just did it. I was authentic about it. And I was very upfront and transparent about things and being like, hey, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. And I'm going to figure it out. And that's how I went. Right. So it's a very, very interesting game. And then we talked a little bit about it with Emmanuel, you know, this game of, you know, every business needs to kind of be more than just a business. You see this a lot with, you know, all the different politics that big corporations, I'm talking like big corporations, get involved in. They get involved in the culture, they get involved in policies and, you know, different political views and things like that. It's a really, really interesting game, whether you're for those or against those or whatever. I'm just bringing up the idea of it as its own. Because, you know, marketing is polarizing, right? When you market to someone, when you, whatever age they are, whatever, you know, gender they are, whatever, anything they are, it is a polarizing thing. Like, you are trying to attract certain people, and you're actually, nobody really says this, but you're trying to repel others, right? That's really what you're ultimately trying to do. Because if you don't repel others, you're going to have everybody in this room. Like, I'd like to think of it as, you know, if you're, say you're trying to do, say I'm doing this show inside of an actual hotel lobby room or a conference room or whatever the case might be. And we're just letting anyone come in and say, hey, just join this podcast show, join this TV show. This guy's talking about some really cool stuff. Just come on in here, right? Who are you going to get? You're going to get probably, you know, people who are traveling through, people who might have kids, people who might be, you know, senior citizens, people who might be different races, different genders, everything. Like, you're just going to get this melting pot of people because there's no context to it. It's just, hey, this guy's doing this show. It's talking about really cool stuff. Come on in here. Right? That's not polarized. It's just very like, well, it's not even attractive, really. But if there's, hey, there's this guy named Dan. He's talking about technology. He's talking about business. He's talking about AI. He's talking about how these things are affecting your life as a business person, as a consumer, as a person on the internet doing different things. You know, that's going to turn some people on. And it's going to turn some people off. And that, I really think, is what speaks to more of, you know, it really becomes this authenticity kind of by default when you do these things. Because the more people I've seen, I'm far from a marketing expert. I'm far from being the go-to authority inside of all this conversation, right? But what I will say is I've seen enough of it and I've done enough of it myself to be able to say, like, you know what? If you're the people who take a stand in their marketing, who actually are saying like, hey, I'm going to stand for this thing. I'm actually going to take a stand for something or against something. I'm actually going to say, hey, this is right. This is wrong. This is the way to do this thing. This isn't the way to do this thing. It's what drives clicks. It's what drives attraction. It's what drives attention. Right? You think about probably the most polarizing figure of our time, of our world, right? Donald Trump. Whether you love him, whether you hate him, he is a polarizing person because of the things he says, because of the things he does, because of this entire marketing machine that is around him. That there's certain people, you watch any kind of news story, right? There's certain people that will say, anything that he says is just awesome. It's just the greatest thing ever. He's, you know, the second coming, damn near, right? But then there's other people who will literally take everything he says and twist it and do it, and it's always different, right? So, and it's like pure evil coming from his mouth, right? It's just one of those examples of, it's how you see it, it's how you perceive it. I'm actually going to get into a news story that talks a little bit more about that, not Donald Trump, but actually the war going on in the Middle East, and all of the different pieces of information that are coming out, disinformation, how it's, you know, being perceived, all these different things that are going on. And we'll get more into that here in a second. But, you know, there's a real conversation to be had around this. As I mentioned in the interview, you know, I think a lot of people, especially when you get into the online world, and we've seen this with social media, particularly, there is a dehumanizing effect to even like this show, the way that we're communicating, the way that we're talking to each other. It's not in person. There has to be some deeper level of authenticity because you're just watching me on TV, or you're watching me on your phone, or you're just watching me on your laptop. Like, you could be across the world. You could be in a different world. You could be watching this at 3 a.m, right? So there has to be a different level of me being able to connect with you and to say things that actually matter and say things that are actually making a difference. And when it comes to you in your business and your clientele and your life, whatever you're doing, you have to be able to do the same thing. And when you do it, especially inside of an online world, it's very, very difficult. Like, it's very hard to do because it's so easy to be a keyboard warrior. It's so easy to just, I was talking with one of my family members that said they got in a fight on Facebook with some random person for the first time in a very, very long time. And it's out of character for him to do these types of things. And that's really, really interesting because it's like, okay, well, why would that happen? There's obviously some triggering thing or something's happening, but it's a polarizing issue. There's a polarizing thing. But that's also a very, you know, easy thing to do because there's no repercussions. He doesn't know this person. They could be in California or, you know, Montana or Texas or wherever. And, you know, we're out here on the East Coast. So like, there's no repercussions to when you're a keyboard warrior arguing with someone. I mean, there are real things like when it comes to mental health and, you know, emotional health and those types of things, but it's not, there's very rare cases of like, I'm going to talk shit about you on Facebook and then you're going to come at me and actually come to my house and like finish the job. You know what I mean? So that really creates this distance and this barrier of, you know what I'm talking about with the keyboard warriors, right? So you have to combat it. You have to be able to provide methods of being real and communicating. And for any of you on here on this podcast, like you can fill out the Q&A portion of this. If you're watching this on Spotify as a video podcast, or you can, you know, check it out on the site, you can actually submit things. You can comment, you can, you know, you can make comments live on YouTube as this is streaming. And I will respond. Like I will actually take the time to respond and whether it's good, whether it's bad, whether it's hateful, whether it's whatever. So anyway, there are just a lot of cool things to think about when it comes to the authenticity, the humanization of this entire conversation. So just a really, really fun interview. Thank you, Emmanuel, for coming on. Really appreciate all that. Okay, so I'm going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back and I'm going to dive into the news stories.
My name is Adriana Morrison, host of the Health Revolution TV show. Join us Tuesdays and Thursdays live, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where our mission is simple: engaging conversations, elevating health and wellness, empowering transformation. Right here on the Achieve TV channel on E360 TV.
Introducing Launchpad, the perfect partner to help you launch your dream project to the world. We know that time is of the essence, and we're here to help you make the most of it. With Launchpad, you'll get access to the most advanced digital tools and strategies to take your idea from a mere concept to a fully fledged success. Whether you're an aspiring entrepreneur or a seasoned pro, we have everything you need to make your mark in the world. So why wait? It's time to take the leap and make your vision a reality. Launchpad, your ultimate launch partner. Let's make magic together.
All right, welcome back. So the first story I want to dive into, now these are stories I actually wanted to include about a week ago. So they are a tiny bit stale. I wouldn't say they're stale, but they were from 4 or 5 days ago anyway. So this first one I'm actually going to show you guys so you can actually just kind of see and go along with it. So there was an executive order. Okay, so Biden releases AI executive order directing agencies to develop safety guidelines. Very, very interesting stuff. So President Joe Biden signed an executive order providing rules around generative AI ahead of any legislation coming from lawmakers. The order has 8 goals: to create new standards for AI safety and security, protect privacy, advance equity and civil rights, stand up for consumers, patients, and students, support workers, promote innovation and competition, advance U.S. leadership in AI technologies, and ensure the responsible and effective government use of the technology. Several government agencies are tasked with creating standards to protect against the use of AI to engineer biological materials, establish best practices around content authentication, and build advanced cybersecurity programs. This is very, very interesting, and just something quickly I wanted to comment on. So I have a background in cybersecurity and went to school for cybersecurity policy, got all kind of master's degree and all that kind of stuff. So things like this are very, very interesting. And I also came from a political science background when it comes to, the different branches of government, how all things work. And I love political science too. I'm definitely a political junkie. So this is very, very interesting when it comes to this, because, you know, obviously, when you wait for a government to do things inside of legislation and actually get everybody working together, it's very, very difficult to do. Case in point, there has never been comprehensive, you know, immigration policy passed in this country ever. And it doesn't look like it'll be anytime soon because it's very, very difficult to do. So what that falls to is the executive branch to pass different executive orders varying from president to president as time goes along. So it's very interesting that the Biden, you know, administration would take the time to go forward on this. I know there's been a lot of things in talks and all this stuff. So it's very, very interesting. Obviously, there's some kind of form of, you know, social and civil thing into that. And I'm not going to get into that. But with the privacy concerns, with the government using this technology and all these types of things, that's very, very interesting. Because, you know, this is a wild west. Like, this is a new frontier for people. This is a new frontier for businesses, for consumers, for even businesses who are creating this technology. Now, like Emmanuel said, there's been, you know, AI around since the 50s. It's not a new thing by any comprehension. But as the proliferation of it has been, you know, exploding in recent months and years, it's gotten more saliency in the public arena, and therefore it's going to have more misuse. That's just who we are as humans. That's our nature. We're going to misuse things. We're going to, you know, they can make all kinds of cool things and we'll turn them into drugs or we'll turn them into weapons. And that's just the nature of humans, unfortunately. So obviously there are concerns with AI of how can this tool be misused? And it's really sad that kind of we have to have things in place as a society to say, oh, wow, this awesome new thing came out. And now we have to figure out how to regulate it or how to prevent people from misusing it. And that's probably, you know, with all kinds of different, you know, whether you talk about gun control, whether you talk about, you know, cars, drugs, alcohol, all kinds of different stuff, right? So it's really interesting that this would be a thing. And I'm actually going to dovetail that with another story, because this is actually more of a global thing, but also, you know, internally to the United States. So it's very interesting. I'd be really interested to see where this goes, you know, because executive orders tend to be, you know, they are what they are. They can be very easily overturned by, you know, next, you know, future presidents. They can be, they're hard. They're sometimes difficult to enforce. A lot of times these are done for just kind of the appeasement of voting blocks and different things like that. I'm not saying this is, I'm just saying that, the, you know, the history of them. And then again, they're very easy to be overturned. And then a lot of times they're just kind of set up to have different agencies have new power under them, or new funding and new departments. And again, they are what they are. That's why, you know, I never like to give a ton of weight to all of these types of things. They are what they are, for lack of a better term. So it's very interesting to see where this will go, because there will probably be legislation for this eventually down the road. I've done some thesis work on all of this inside of not inside of AI, but inside of like more of the topic of mass shootings and how all this stuff works inside of the gun control debate. That's stuff I did 10, 15 years ago back in school. So it's very interesting to see where this goes, how it will affect. They say it will not affect, you know, publicly released things like ChatGPT. They're not going to like recall things and then all of a sudden take it off the market to redo it and all this type of stuff. But moving forward, there's going to be new things input. And, you know, I think there's good pieces to this. And I think there's, you know, obviously concerns to it. I think it's good that not only are the CEOs of these companies actually calling for this and, you know, kind of pulling back the reins on their own, you know, forward advancement and stuff, which is not something you see very often. But it's good. I think Elon called for this too. Like, hey, like we really need to kind of pump the brakes on this AI stuff, because it's gotten so out of hand so quickly. And do we really know what we're doing? Maybe some of that was for marketing and for polarization. Maybe some of it wasn't. Maybe some of it was real. So it's hard to say for people like you and me who are just in the background and not really know exactly what's going on with all these things. But you know, again, it's just something to be aware of, something to keep an eye on. But again, you know, me, I'm always a person who will tend to be skeptical of really anything governmentally involved. That's just how I've grown up. That's just how I've become oriented to the world through my own experiences and my own investigation and my own questioning of things. So anyway, just wanted to put this out there, because I wanted to dovetail that with this story here, which I'll start sharing, which is actually inside of, as I mentioned, not only inside of the United States, but the larger world, as it would be, which is the G7, right? So exclusive G7 to agree AI code of conduct for companies. This was published back in October 29th. So it's, again, last week's stuff. But the group of seven, the G7 industrial countries, will on Monday agree a code of conduct for companies developing advanced artificial intelligence systems, a G7 document showed, as governments seek to mitigate the risks and potential misuse of the technology. The voluntary code of conduct, keyword, the voluntary code of conduct, will set a landmark for how major countries govern AI amid privacy concerns and security risks. The leaders of the group of the G7 economies, made up of Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, Britain, and the United States, as well as the EU, kicked off the process in May at a ministerial forum dubbed the Hiroshima AI Process. Its 11-point code promotes safe, secure, and trustworthy AI worldwide and will provide voluntary guidance for actions by organizations developing the most AI system, the most advanced AI systems, including the most advanced foundational models and generative AI systems. So again, this is a bigger level story. And it's very interesting because that's what a lot of these come out as guidelines, as things that are best practices for big conglomerates or big corporations to actually follow and implement, which again, you know, sometimes these things get broad stroke painted as the G7 is coming down with these hammer things that everyone has to follow. And you know, the Orwellian world is coming to an end, and it's just not the case. It's just not true. You know, it could be the start of those things, and that's what people like to always say. Again, very, very early to tell on all of these types of things, but it's very interesting that a global organization like the G7 is actually doing things like this and taking actions like this in a way that is very forward thinking, very proactive in these types of things. So again, you know, good things to it, bad things to it, interesting things to it, concerns to it. Is what it is. All right. So another, I mentioned a story here that has to do with the Israel conflict and in the war, the Israel-Hamas war that's going on. So let me share this this guy right here. Yeah, generative AI is playing a surprising role in Israel-Hamas disinformation. Even as some feared the war would be the first in history to be flooded with machine-made fake images, that hasn't happened. The technology's impact on the conflict is far more subtle. Very, very interesting. So in the weeks since Hamas launched its October 7th surprise attack on Israel, the ensuing conflict has generated an unprecedented wave of disinformation, an algorithmically driven fog of war that has tripped up major news organizations and left social media companies floundering. Yet amid all the deceptive images and video moving around on social media, the content generated by artificial intelligence tools has remained relatively peripheral. Even as some wondered if the Israel-Hamas war would be the first conflict dominated by false generative AI images, the technology has had a more complex and subtle impact. Okay, so what are they saying? They say AI-generated disinformation is being used by activists to solicit support or give the impression of wider support for a particular side. Examples include an AI-generated billboard in Tel Aviv championing Israel Defense Forces, an Israel account sharing fake images of people cheering for the IDF, an Israel influencer using AI to generate condemnations of Hamas, and AI images portraying victims of Israel's bombardment of Gaza. So a lot here. This is really interesting. Now, this was always what I remember hearing when, you know, ChatGPT first came out, that was going to be the big thing, right? When is the technology going to come along where somebody's able to take a voiceover of the president along with a video of the president that matches that voiceover with a very authentic looking background and crowd and environment and go on and make very provocative statements against companies or countries like China, Iran, Russia, all these types of things. That's a super scary thing, right? I remember there's a movie, Die Hard with a Vengeance, I believe. It's where, you know, there's cyber terrorist that actually broadcast a fake video of the Capitol exploding from within, just absolutely exploding. But it didn't, right? That was the fake out. Because everyone goes out the window in DC and looks at the window and it's like, no, that's actually real. But people outside of DC would have no idea. That's something that is this type of thing, right? So this is really, really interesting. So there is a very, very good book. If you I had to read this for my master's, it's literally called On War. And very, very what is his name? Von Clausewitz. Very, very interesting book. And this is really written, you know, in an old sense of what are the rules of war, how, like, the fog of war. There's always war is deception, right? And the online world is another domain of being able to deceive, being able to manipulate, being able to put out fake information, to put out, you know, again, like these things that are drumming up, hey, let's make this look like we're stronger than we are. This isn't anything new inside of the world of war. You always want to make your enemy uncomfortable, you know, disorganized, chaotic. That is the essence of war ever since we were riding around on, you know, horses with pitchforks, right? Like, that's always been the way of it. It's just it's moved into a new domain. So it's really, really interesting to see, you know, again, it's video and audio can be, you know, kind of traced and seen. At least it's not super advanced in this generative AI of, you know, hey, we can actually prove that that's wrong, or we can, like, a quick fact check is actually going to show, like, yeah, that didn't really happen. That's AI, right? But what they were talking about in that article, that's very, very interesting when it comes to the you know, wars are won in the public mind. It's a war of whose side are you on, of who do you actually support? And if there's low support for a particular war in a country, that's going to be very hard for that government to sell those people on supporting that war, either it's financially or with actual troops or anything like that. So, you know, would there be videos coming out that are actually not true of someone who's on a particular side that's actually now condemning it, right? As long as somebody is very authentic, again, going back to the authenticity thing, how I tie all this in, if someone's very, like, I'm on this side, I support this, you know, this value system, I support this political end and whatever it might be, when all of a sudden something comes out that's super opposite, that's obviously a red flag to people to be like, well, did that person really say this? Because given who they are and everything we know about them, it's very hard to believe that they would actually say this thing or do this thing, right? It's kind of like the sniff test. It's like, that doesn't seem right to me. And as we, as, you know, normal people that have common sense can kind of see things, that's really kind of a no-brainer when it comes to things. But the accumulation of this stuff over time, when a lie gets repeated enough, it's eventually believed, right? So when there's little generative things that are stacked upon each other that are very, very subtle, that are very interesting, that aren't really noticed, that kind of fly under the radar, that's when things add up in 1 to 2 to 3 to 5 years that completely change the public's mind on a particular topic. So this is really, really something that's worth paying attention to. That's worth, you know, doing your own research on, thinking through in your own logical ways, because this matters. This type of stuff matters. I mean, this is war we're talking about. This is actual real people dying, real people engaging in things. Like, this is a real topic, right? So just a very, very interesting thing to talk about. So those are a little bit of the stories that I wanted to bring to light here. I did have another one. I don't think I'm going to have time for it. We'll probably include it maybe in the next episode. But tune in next week. I'm talking to a very, very interesting guest by the name of John Pethke. He actually... it's going to be one of our very first case studies here on the show in quite a while. So we're going to talk through how he went from having an app idea to bringing it to life, how he, like, all these different struggles, like, literally a behind the scenes look of someone just like you who might be thinking about an app, thinking about software, wanting to use software to leverage things. How do you actually bring that to life? This guy actually did it. He's been going through the process. He's not made it to the high levels of success yet because it is still very new. So this is a very authentic word of the day, authentic story that I'm trying to bring to you to show this process of the big flowery, like, hey, here's this cool startup that's a unicorn type of thing. Like, here's the real story of someone who had an idea and didn't know how to bring it to life, but figured it out and then is now going through the action, doing the real work of actually growing this thing inside of a logical business system with an app, with software, you know, hiring people, expanding it, starting as a single person. It's going to be super, super awesome. So be sure to tune in next week, whether you're watching this on YouTube, on E360, whether you're listening to this on a podcast, anywhere you are. I super, super appreciate any ratings and reviews that you can leave, especially on Spotify. Really appreciate all of you on there as well for continuing to follow and support the show. So any kind of reviews, any kind of ratings are super, super appreciative. Share this show with someone who you think might find it interesting. All right. I'll see you guys later. Thank you for joining.